like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Gretchen Primack, a writer, poet, educator, and author of two collections of poetry, including Kind, in which the poems address our relationships with animals, how we view them, how we treat them, how we mistreat them, and other viewpoints. Activism as poetry. We'll find out about Kind, how she approaches her work, which has appeared in the Paris Review, among other prestigious journals, and more when we speak with Gretchen Primack in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Betsy Smith, Executive Director of Voices for Children of Tampa Bay, about their plans to launch the first courthouse dog program in Florida and a related fundraiser event that will be holding next Wednesday, March 5th. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song, actually called Animal Song. This is Loud and Rewrite with, that's right, Animal Song on Talking Animals.
Dog goes bow out, kitty goes meow, the milk cow, she goes moo. Chicken goes cluck and the duck goes quack, and the rooster goes cock-a-doodle-doo. The pig is fat and the snail is slow, and the donkey sure is dumb. The lion is brave and the bear is strong, and the snake spits out its tongue. Shell, ants in the hill, and horses on the merry-go-round. Big as a whale, crazy like a fox, lazy as a three-toed sloth. Beavers making dams, and bees making honey, Dr. Caterpillar and Mr. Moth.
That was Loud and Rewrite with Animal Song, a zippy animal song to get us indeed started this morning. Let's jump into our chat with Gretchen with a reminder. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Gretchen Primack to Talking Animals. Good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
My pleasure.
So before we dive into Kind, which I can barely contain my enthusiasm for doing so, let's get into its poetry therein. Let's first get into the poet. So let me ask you, sort of what first enchanted you about poetry?
It might have been something as simple and nerdy as a class, because I think the first poem I ever published, I was about 8 years old, and a poem that I wrote in school and ended up in a little magazine. And so I guess I caught the bug early on.
So already I think we're seeing Gretchen Primack, precocious poet, is the story here. So what was that poem? What was that poem? What was it about, or what was it called?
It was about the night sky, and I wish I could remember more about it. And it would be interesting to read it now because it might have been a piece of crap.
Well, I hardly think so. It was award-winning, as I recall. So that's really interesting because, you know, some people obviously are drawn to poetry at a very early age, as you clearly were, and others, you know, it can be sort of tough sledding, right? They people find it a bit esoteric or just sort of tough to get into it. But
I should probably say that between that lovely moment at age 8 and starting to really publish in my 20s, there was a long period of disenchantment. Because I agree that a lot of poetry is sort of unreadable. So it is a really tough genre.
And did it, but even from like 8 until those 20s, when maybe the gap from the first published poem to some of the other published work, but still as a reader and appreciator of poetry, was there always a pretty strong connection and response from you?
With certain poets, I remember that a family friend gave me a big, fat collection of poems when I was about 15, and it was the poems of Edna St. Vincent Millay. I really fell in love with that book. There were plenty of poems that we had to read in school or, you know, even in college where I just said, ugh, what's going on here? This person really trying to connect with me as a reader at all. And that's important to me.
For sure. Well, you know, so what's interesting too is that you had those kind of responses, and yet again back to writing a poem and having it recognized and prize winning even as an 8-year-old, that you didn't seem inclined apparently to continue writing poetry until you did get into your 20s.
You know, I wrote it, but it felt like that private thing that everyone does. Really feel like, oh, well, I'll certainly be
sharing this with the, yeah,
making this a major part of my life. Yeah,
I see. Well, so then, when you did get in your 20s, what prompted you then to say, you know what, I'm going public with some of these. I'm not doing them just for my journal. What was there a particular moment or just situation that prompted that, or?
Well, my work life when I graduated college immediately had to do with social justice. So the poetry always felt like a back burner. But what I would do is I would be taking classes at night. So I was a labor organizer in Milwaukee, and then at night I was taking a class at UWM and, you know, a poetry class, and feeling really good about it and enjoying it. Then I moved to New York City. I'm running a project for, you know, women who've been sexually harassed, but I'm taking a class at Brooklyn at NYU at night. And I was always making it part of my life. Mm-hmm. And that NYU professor, I won't forget her. Her name was Ruth Dannon. She said, you know what? What are you doing? Like, why don't you do this? Why don't you take this seriously? And it had an impact. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to grad school and sort of getting into that world in a more serious way.
Does that mean like a MFA in poetry or a poetry emphasis or...
It was indeed an MFA in poetry. I started at Brooklyn College and ended up at Sarah Lawrence College.
Okay. So, well, again, I say a big shout out to Ruth Dannon then, because, well, it sounds like, too, that sometimes those are pivotal moments where you're doing something, but you're doing other stuff kind of more day to day. And it takes somebody like that to say, hey, the other thing is the thing for you.
Right. And I still I continue to do social justice-oriented work even after I graduated. You know, I was trying to kind of walk both. And I think what KIND does is it combines those two loves for me. And that was the first time that I had done that. Those lives felt separate, you know, activism or, you know, I taught in prison for years. And, you know, all of these things felt sort of separate, and KIND brought some of the issues together.
Yeah, well, if we have time later, I definitely intended to ask you about the work in the college program there, we're flirting with KIND. I don't know why we don't just go with KIND. So, but let me just as sort of a parallel, you know, storyline with what we're talking about in terms of poetry and how you wound back up in there, and let's get the other storyline too about animal activism side of the Gretchen Primack story. First of all, to what extent does that sort of bespeak a lifelong love of animals?
Absolutely. I think I came out of the womb begging for a dog and seeing the sentience in just about every animal that I interacted with. I loved snakes and I loved pigs, and I just really felt I didn't understand. I mean, I think a lot of kids are this way. They don't understand these sort of artificial distinctions that we make between species.
Mm-hmm.
This is one to love and bring into your home. This is one to put on your plate. This is one to ignore entirely. This is one to smash. I didn't understand that, and I think that's true of a lot of kids, but I never came to understand it either. It never made sense to me and still doesn't.
Right, so you were able to repel that sort of quote-unquote logic.
Yes.
Okay, so then trace a little bit further for us the path then from animal lover and someone who didn't understand those distinctions to advocate/activist.
Well, literature actually plays a role in this. I was taking a summer class about fiction, a creative writing class, and we read a story that had a rather gory scene in it involving the slitting of the throat of a lamb. And I remember saying in that class, boy, this really bothers me, and having another student say, well, are you a vegetarian? I was 13 at the time. I don't know if I'd ever heard the word vegetarian, but point taken. You know, could I complain? Could I say, oh, that sounds awful. That moves me. And then go eat a hamburger? Could I do that? So I thought about it, and I thought about it, and it took me a couple months because I was a big meat eater. Then I just put down my fork one night. So that was the path to vegetarian. I'm vegan now. Took a long time for me to be informed about the truth about dairy and eggs, so mm-hmm. the non-meat aspect of veganism. But boy, did it blow my mind when I heard it. So that, I think, that moment is when I would say that I really became an activist, when I started to really understand what goes on. I mean, if you are a compassionate person who really understands what's going on, who has been able to look it in the face despite knowing that that will make you change, to do that is to become an activist.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, well, and a couple of things there. One is, isn't it interesting though that even that you were one of those kids, those rare kids who didn't see the distinction between the kind of animals that we hang out with and pet and whatever, and the kind of animals we have on our plate that night at dinner. As the years unfolded, that some of that got a little bit blurry, and then the person in that class, noticing your response to the slitting of the throat of the lamb, sort of brought it back around.
Yeah, absolutely. I still, as you're absolutely right, as understanding as I felt I was of other species, I still ate them, and I ate them with pleasure.
With gusto, even, perhaps.
With absolute gusto.
Yeah. But so it's really, really interesting. So I guess with all that in mind, then, so to you, how much does kind represent sort of a fairly sweeping gesture of animal activism then?
It's a really sweeping gesture. There's a glaring omission, and that omission is there is no poem about fish in this book. And I think fish can be a real fallback for people. Oh, I just eat fish. And I find this really interesting, because it's as if somebody lives underwater and their bodies have adapted to that in such a way that they look quite different from us, they therefore can't have any traits like us. They can't have relationships, they can't have communication, they can't have pain or pleasure, simply by virtue of the fact that they have adapted to an environment very different from ours. And that's really what's going on, because when people study marine life, they come up with very humbling information about the complexity they're in. And this should not be surprising, but I think it is surprising. All that to say, I feel bad about not having a fish poem in this book, because besides that, it's really quite wide-ranging.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it really, I mean, it's I mean, we're talking about it being a sort of a form of animal activism, and it's certainly a singular form of animal activism, and let's talk about it more in a second. Let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Gretchen Primack, a poet and animal advocate who's combined both passions in a book of her poems called Kind. If you'd like to ask Gretchen a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.com. kind.org. So yeah, so let's talk more about Kind. It's genesis and your thinking behind the book. Did you set out to create this sort of collection or realize over time, hey, I have a number of poems about and for animals. I should keep going and make a book here.
It was somewhere in between. The genesis of it is a poem that's in the book called God's Glory, and it's about a mouse, and it's a true story. I was at a writer's colony, an artist's retreat in Vermont, and we were all just there for a month, and we had a lot in common. We were artists and writers who wanted to spend a month in Vermont working on our art, right? But we had quite a divergence when it came to the other animals on the planet. And so one manifestation of that is that someone who was annoyed by a mouse in his room killed the mouse. And I just thought, wow, I mean, that's hubris. You don't live here, but the mouse does. That mouse has a family living in this house, and you found him or her annoying, and you took the life. And it was nothing for him. It wasn't, you know, something that he really thought about. He just felt that he had that right. And I was in writing mode, since I'm very right, and ended up writing about it, and then writing a little bit more and more. And before I even left that environment, I thought, I think I want to do a book. So it started with just a poem, but really quickly came into, you know, this is a vacuum in the poetry world, pretty much. And let me just do something to fill it.
Well, yeah, so, it is a vacuum, and yet it might be interesting if you could try to place the work in Kind within the context of things that are traditions of poetry, like as a means of protest, as an agent of change, which it seems to me very much in keeping with.
Exactly, yeah. We have in poetry the tradition of animal poems, and we have in poetry the tradition of poetry that is to agitate and is to make change and is to raise consciousness. What we haven't seen is those two things together much.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very drawn, you know, as I said, I'm an activist in many ways. I'm a workers' rights activist and a feminist and a prison rights activist. And, you know, I really think that social justice is what all of us should be thinking about a lot of the time. So I'm drawn to poems in that tradition. And there's an amazing conference every couple years, a festival called Split This Rock in D.C., which I highly recommend for anybody who is a poet listening and cares about making change. And its entire job is to think about poems that are specifically about making change. And I'm in heaven there.
Yeah.
And I think that this is yet another way, right? Poetry is yet another way of bringing ideas to the world. And so what I wanted to see was that combination of poems about animals and poems that are trying to bring ideas to the world.
And that really accomplishes that. And you know, a good handful of poems throughout Kind are dealing with factory farming, sort of a significant thread, really, even through the book. Is a fundamental thought here that writing an array of poems addressing, in this case, let's say, factory farming from various vantage points, you're providing another portal through which people can learn about some of the horrors or other details endemic to factory farming that maybe, for one reason or another, they wouldn't either have occasion to know, or maybe this would be another way to get that information that they, by choice or otherwise, just wouldn't have encountered.
Exactly. There are so many vehicles at our disposal in the world of information, right? And so my friend Marisa made a beautiful film called Veggiecated. She's been on your show.
Yeah.
That is a way to get the word out there about our food system and just how broken it is. And there are pamphlets that do that. And I actually helped Jenny Brown from Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. I was her co-writer for her memoir called The Lucky Ones. So it's a memoir, and it deals with these issues. That's another vehicle. Word out there. So we've got memoirs, we've got pamphlets, we've got documentaries, we've got Sue Coe's art, right? And then here's another way. Because we don't know what's going to reach people. So why not make so many options for them that there's sort of no choice but to be moved somewhere? Are people out there, you know, when I give readings or when, you know, people write me about the book, they have said, okay, I get it. You know, that's it. That's it for me and Derry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
or
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Say, okay, then there it is. You know, and people write Marisa all the time, and they say, I saw Veducated, and I get it, you know. So, and people write Jenny all the time, I read The Lucky Ones, and I get it. So I want this to be another way to get it.
Yeah. Well, no, I could, you know, it's so interesting, and I guess lately, and the different approaches, but sometimes certain things just pop, and or it's easy for people, whether it should be or shouldn't be is a whole other discussion. But I'm thinking, of, for example, about Blackfish. And uh-huh. just people have been writing about and talking about the whole orca situation at SeaWorld and other places for a long time and doing it really, really well and effectively. It all changed with that documentary, especially when it was shown on CNN or now on Netflix. I mean, it's, you know, you can just sit on your couch and see what goes on and you don't have to really do anything. And then, you know, you're, I think, almost in all cases, pretty profoundly affected by that. Anyway, well, so with that in mind, do you find that writing some of these poems and sort of thinking about the issues and creating the images upset you anew about the indignities so many animals experience, or does it in fact serve as kind of a release from some of those feelings of sadness and outrage?
Definitely the latter. And people have asked me this before, and it's such a great question. I mean, to plunge yourself into this, can't that just be horrifying? But no, this is the reality. So I am always aware that this is the reality, what goes on every day while we're talking, while we're sleeping, while we're eating, what is going on for animals of so many species in this world. It's happening. And so I can either be aware of it and feel that I'm not helping out in any way, or I can be aware of it and feel that I'm doing what I can do. And when I'm doing what I can do, I feel so much better. So writing this collection felt really good, and giving readings for this collection and giving interviews for this collection, it just feels really good. And just being vegan feels really good. It feels like I'm actually doing something. But when I go that much further, whatever it is, it does sort of, well, it feels great.
Yeah.
So
well,
that's what happened here.
Cool. Well, I in a moment then, this might be a really sort of fitting time to ask you to read a poem from Kind, and maybe Love This would be one for now. But let me just quickly again let people know who might only be just tuning in now. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Gretchen Primack, who we're discussing her collection of poetry called Kind. And we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So do you feel like reading that one, Gretchen?
Oh, that would be a pleasure. So this poem, Love This, it's about a cow, and I'm looking at a cow because the incredible New York-based artist Susan Siegel was kind enough to not only let me use her dramatic painting as the cover, but she also did original art for the inside. And Susan is somebody who really understands these issues, and that's clear from her beautiful work. So
yeah.
I wish that everyone out there in Radioland could see the drawing of the cow that I'm looking at as I read this poem. Love This. A couple things that might make it an even richer listening experience is to know that a cow carries her baby for 9 months, just as we do. The other thing to know before the ending of the poem, in case listeners don't know, is that global warming is tremendously affected by animal agriculture. In fact, it's one of the top 2 to 3 causes of global warming, is animal agriculture. Okay, Love This. The body floods with chemicals saying, love this. And she does, and births it. It is a boy she begins to clean and nose, but he is dragged away by his back feet. She will never touch him again, though she hears him howl and calls back for days. Her breast milk is banked for others. Her son is pulled away to lie in his box. He will be packed for slaughter. How ingenious we are to make product from byproduct, make use of the child, kill and pack and truck him to plates. And when her gallons slow, we start over, and her body says, love this, and she does, though in a moment she will never touch him again. His milk is not for him. And when the milk slows too slow, she will join him on the line, pounds of ground. And how we will dine and talk of our glossy dogs. Her body will break up on our forks as mothers beg us for the grain we stuffed her with, and children beg us for the water scouring her blood from the factory walls. And when her wastes and gases and panic heat our air so hot our world stops breathing, then will we stop? Then will we grow kind and let the air cool and mothers breathe?
Wow, that's Love This by Gretchen Primack, our guest at Talking Animals, from her book Kind. So anything you otherwise wanna say about Love This, either how you came to write it or if there was something specific that spurred it?
Boy, you know, this issue, it really blew my head off when I learned the truth about dairy. I mean, I was just such a happy cheese eater for so many years after I went vegetarian. I had no idea that cows just didn't walk around full of milk, trotting over to Farmer Brown, who would do them the honor and the pleasure of milking them. I my ignorance, I think, is indicative of the ignorance of most of us. And, of course, there's good reason why we don't have this information, because it's incensing and very upsetting. But of course a cow needs to be pregnant in order to produce milk. And of course, if we want that milk for ourselves, we have to take her baby away from her. And of course that makes her mourn and mourn and mourn. And the baby, who's now byproduct, is killed. And you know, this is true on large and small farms alike. It doesn't have to be a factory farm. Anyone who's trying to make money from milking has to get the baby away from the mother so that you know, there's enough milk to go to market. And nobody can afford to just raise those babies to enjoy life for 20 years, so they're killed. I mean, this is the reality of all dairy operations. And I've talked to tiny farmers, and I've, you know, read about the larger farmers. So this basic reality of the dairy industry is so harrowing. And it was interesting when I went on a Midwestern tour with Kind, and on the first leg, as I was leaving my home in the Hudson Valley and heading to Pittsburgh, I passed a truck of tiny calves, and I made eye contact with a tiny calf, and I knew exactly what had happened. I knew that he had been born, and that he, instead of being right against his mama, which is where every fiber of his being was telling him to be, he was put in a truck and was being sent to slaughter. And at my next stop, when I stopped for gas and a snack, I walked into that little convenience store, and there was the milk, and there was the cheese, and there was the creamer for the coffee. And I thought, there it is, right there.
As you're describing this, too, it's kind of what we were talking about earlier is just different ways to approach getting that information, or making that connection, because as you sort of said at one point, of course the cows have to be pregnant to yield the milk. But I think there's a huge gap between, we all kind of know that, but then like how we get those big jugs of milk, there's a huge space between point A and point B in that case. And really, you just don't have occasion to think about it until you're confronted with some information or a film or a poem or a pamphlet, whatever. It's like, oh my God, yes, of course.
Oh,
I mean, it's,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't want to think about it. And I get it, because I didn't want to think about it either. And we're really a very conservative species. I mean, I see this all the time. Even very progressively minded people, when it comes to this level of self-interest, what we put in our bodies, we revert to a real conservatism. We don't want to change. And that can be hard. that can be hard for an activist to see, and it's also something that I understand, having been there myself.
For sure. Well, and by the way, Gretchen, I'm just going to quickly read an email that came in while you were talking a little bit about Love This. The subject line is, "I love this guest!" Exclamation mark. And it says, "Can't wait to get kind. Poetry has such a huge impact on our brains and hearts. How wonderful that she uses her talent for change."
Wow.
Nice. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I just want to, for people who want the book, this is my there's another aspect of my activism that makes it slightly complicated to do that. I'm against Amazon. I'm against Amazon.com. I'm a bookseller. I work at an incredible independent bookstore in Woodstock, New York, called The Golden Notebook. And so I can tell you, as a writer and as a bookseller, that what Amazon.com is doing to literature is really, really bad. So my book is not on Amazon, and I know that that costs me sales because it is the easy place to go. I understand that. But I'm actually willing to have less books out there if it means that I'm not supporting this behemoth, monstrous corporation. So the easiest way to get kind is actually just to go to GretchenPrimack.com, click on the little button that says kind.
And I should note that Gretchen, I think we all know how to spell that, but Primack is P-R-I-M-A-C-K. So it's GretchenPrimack.com. So Gretchen, not to get too far off track here, but let me just, is the objection to Amazon more about just what's happened within the advent of ebooks or much broader than that?
It is broader than that. I mean, I'm not going to speak because I don't know as much about what they've done to other industries. But to literature, you know, they have undercut independent bookstores to the point where it is extremely difficult to run an independent bookstore, and you can look at the figures of the numbers that have closed their doors, and it's absolutely tragic. I mean, as somebody who gets to work in one and an amazing one at that, what they provide a community is absolutely priceless. I see it every shift that I work. And to rid a community of that, not just financially, of course the tax base, of course jobs in the community, but also just in terms of a richness, a quality of life. I mean, it's like a community center. And we know, as staff, we really know these books, and we can talk to people about them, and we love talking to people about them, and then people talk to each other about them. And it just becomes such a community resource. And that all goes away when somebody says, "Oh, I get $3 off if I go here." They will shut their doors, and you know, we'll pay $12 for a cocktail or $20 for a tie. If we pay that for a book, it enriches us so much, and it enriches our community so much. So, of course, I have to put a plug for the indies in here.
No, well, that's great because the there's far too few and fewer still of the Golden Notebooks around. And those of us who love books and reading, you know, are hard-pressed now to find anything resembling a Golden Notebook. So all right. The more anything to preserve them for sure. So, and by the way, Gretchen, even as you were mentioning that then this was sent a few minutes ago, but it only came in as you were describing some of the viewpoints on Amazon and independent booksellers. Another emailer said, "What a wonderfully compassionate, intelligent woman. Where can I buy her book?" So there you go. Yeah. So, okay, we're just sort of in the tail end of our time, I'm afraid, Gretchen. But one thing, too, for people who haven't so far been lucky enough to read Kind, I guess I'm curious, were you not only seeking to provide a range of poems and styles the way many collections would, but also a range of animals and animal issues dealt with over the course of the book? I mean, you mentioned earlier that you regret not having a fish included, but were you also sort of going to cover a fairly large spectrum of animals and animal issues along the way?
Very much so. We've got a poem here in the voice of a circus elephant. We've got a poem about a sable. We've got a poem about a chicken. We've got a poem about a chained dog. We've got a poem about an old cat. It really does run the gamut, and that's certainly intentional. And then stylistically, it runs the gamut. And, I mean, there's a couple love poems in there because I'm lucky enough to have a life partner, Gus, who agrees with me on this stuff, and that's pretty fabulous to have and to include him. He's an animal that I really love.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, with that in mind, because anybody who's listening to this show knows I'm fairly, I mean, I'm nuts about all animals, but I'm extra nutty about elephants, and therefore I have huge, huge problems with, you know, ringling and circus elephants, yeah, et cetera. So maybe in our remaining moment, if you wouldn't mind maybe reading Ringling, as you mentioned earlier, is written sort of from the viewpoint of a, I guess, sort of former or retired circus elephant. Is that?
Yeah. She's older.
Okay.
But she's still having to go around.
Oh, she's still active. Okay. I guess. Okay.
To go around. She's
okay.
Just, in an off moment, she's thinking about this. So, and a beautiful Susan Siegel drawing of an elephant accompanies this poem. Ringling, maybe someday you will trick for me. Maybe I will find value in you on one foot. I will take you from family, home, so I can watch you balance. Will you bore me? I bore myself now, reduced to your current conditions, cut off from my life and language. None of me is left. Still, you found something to waste.
Wow. That's, again, that's Ringling in the book called Kind from our guest today, the poet Gretchen Primack. And again, if you want to find out more about her or buy the book, her website is Gretchen Primack. And again, it's Primack. So it's GretchenPrimack.com. Gretchen, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
So much fun. What a pleasure.
Thanks again. Good luck. Bye-bye. All right, in just a few minutes, we'll speak briefly with Betsy Smith of Voices for Children of Tampa Bay about their introducing Florida's first courthouse dog and a related fundraiser being held a week from tonight, March 5th. Right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Before we do, let me just note that comedy is enormously important to this show and my life and the lives of my family. So with that in mind, I want to be sure to acknowledge that today marks the 20th anniversary of the passing of Bill Hicks. I don't really feel compelled to say much else, but I also didn't want to not mention it at all. Onward and back to the Comedy Corner. This is Hannibal Buress with a piece called Pigeons Get Murked on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I have weird aspirations, like I really want to kick a pigeon. Because pigeons walk around like they're untouchable, like you're not untouchable, I'll kick it out of you. You're not waiting for the bus because you can fly. But I can't kick pigeons because there's always people around. If I kick one, some lady will see, like, oh my gosh, that guy just kicked a pigeon in broad daylight. And she goes and tells her husband, honey, I saw this guy kick a pigeon in broad daylight. Her husband tells his boss, my wife said this guy kicked a pigeon in broad daylight. His boss knows somebody at the paper. They say, you know, front page of the Tribune, black dudes are kicking pigeons. There's been a flurry of pigeon kicking going on in the black community. Must be stopped at once. Save the pigeons. Must stop these PKBPs, pigeon kicking black people. Save the pigeons. Acronyms are always hilarious. I don't know why I want to kick a pigeon. I just figure to make my day better. Somehow I kick a pigeon in the morning, something bad happens that evening, like, you know what, that happened. But I kicked a pigeon earlier as she was relaxing and invigorating. It's impossible to kick a pigeon, they're too quick. I tried different strategies. I tried to, like, side swipe, kick a pigeon and shit. I tried to punt one. I set up cardboard and act like I'm a breakdancer, street performer. And try to hit him with like a... But they don't buy that. They know all the gimmicks. That's why I want to have the pigeon kicking Olympics, where you get judged by the distance that you kick the pigeon, the number of feathers you kick off the pigeon, and the octave of the squawk. When you kick the pigeon like a high pitch, like, ooh, that's a gold medal. You kick out of that pigeon, you're a goddamn warrior. You deserve your own statue in a park, like, yeah.
All right. That was Hannibal Buress with a piece called Pigeons Get Murked, taken from his album My Name is Hannibal. All right, to fill us in on Florida's first courthouse dog program from Voices for Children of Tampa Bay, let's welcome Betsy Smith to Talking Animals. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning.
Thanks.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. So let's quickly first just have a little bit on what Voices for Children of Tampa Bay is or does.
Right. Voices for Children provides advocacy for abused, neglected, and abandoned children in Hillsborough County. The way we do that is we send volunteer guardian ad litem into the courthouse, into the courtrooms to make sure that these kids get what they need while they're in foster care.
So tell us then how introducing a courthouse dog into the picture will affect things.
Okay, well, these children have been obviously victimized by the people that should care for them the most, their parents, and they are traumatized by this abuse. And the part of the courthouse dog is to allow these children to calm down and to lower their stress levels so that they can actually articulate the abuse so that the courts can have a greater understanding of what's happened to them. These children rarely trust adults, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But these dogs, research shows that in the presence of these animals, that these children are calmer and more willing to talk about what's happened to them.
For sure. They'll have all kinds of conversation. I mean, just generally, even in situations far less dark or tragic than we're discussing, we've all seen children have all kinds of conversations with dogs and other animals. But this, as you're suggesting, really gives them a chance to address often horrific things in a way that they just wouldn't.
Absolutely.
And so tell us about how did you guys come to get the program launched? It's about to be launched, I guess, but was this something you guys have been thinking about for a while and working on for a while?
Yeah. About a year ago, I had read about the Courthouse Dog program and contacted the founders of the Courthouse Dog program and out of Oregon. And it's taken about a year to actually have the program put in place in Hillsborough County. We are the first in the state of Florida to have a courthouse facility dog, which is a very different type of training that these dogs go through than, say, a therapy dog or an assistance dog. These dogs are trained to be like almost like living teddy bears, where they just lay there and they just add a sense of calm and of serenity in an environment that's very stressful. Our handler, Brenda Coker, has been in training for the past 2 weeks to learn how to handle these highly sophisticated animals. And we're excited to kick this off next Wednesday.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about, we're just almost out of time, Betsy, but tell us a little bit about Wednesday and what that's about and what that what purpose that serves.
Wednesday night at the Bungalow on Kennedy Boulevard, we are having a fundraiser, and I'm introducing Brenda and her dog, Tibet, in Tampa, 6 to 9 p.m., and it's open to the public, and Bungalow will be providing appetizers, and there will be beverages available, and Brenda and Tibet will have a little program to show you all about what we're going to be doing with this amazing animal here in Tampa.
Well, that's great. It sounds really cool and interesting. I mean, seeing those dogs, they're so amazing. Like you say, they're great dogs to begin with, obviously, to be selected, but then the training they undergo is very specialized. And but this also, Wednesday night, sounds like an opportunity to probably help fund some of the training and some of the other costs that are incurred in providing a courthouse dog. So
These dogs are it costs about $1,800 a year just to keep them groomed and fed, and their vet bills and everything. So we need to make sure that this dog has everything it needs to do its job.
Cool. And Betsy, is there a website that we should get in case somebody only heard part of this, or they're driving and they maybe are interested in finding out more about the program or coming Wednesday, where they could get some details?
Sure. It's www.vfcgal.org.
And can you say those letters one more time? Because I think your cell just dropped out right at the key moment there. So
sorry about that. It's vfcgal.org. Someone can't write while they're driving. It's like voicesforchildrengal.org.
Okay.
VFCGAL.org.
All right. So VFCGAL.org for more information just about the program overall, or to find out if you want to attend the fundraiser to help Tibet and everybody launch and keep going in this very, very important program. So thanks, Betsy, for joining us on Talking Animals.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. Duncan Strauss, towards the end of the show, which we're on the cusp of now, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households by author Ellen Jaffe Jones, signed, no less, by Ellen. We'll get to that in a moment or two. We'll just read a quick story here in the animal news and announcements first. And this is from the AP, Dateline Richmond, Virginia. Cigarette maker Lorillard has banned animal testing following discussions with an animal rights group that has raised concerns over industry studies in which animals were forced to inhale cigarette smoke, eat tobacco, and have cigarette tar painted on their skin. The nation's third biggest tobacco company and maker of Newport brand cigarettes confirmed the new policy to the Associated Press on Monday, which says it will no longer conduct or commission animal research unless it's necessary to meet regulatory requirements. Greensboro, North Carolina-based company said it hasn't done any animal testing in about 3 years, and newer techniques such as in vitro testing, which experiments are done in test tubes and a computer model, can be used to test for toxicity instead of testing on animals, one of the Lorillard chief compliance officers noted. Well, this is not a great one either, but a Sarasota man was jailed early Sunday morning after police said he doused his girlfriend's puppy with hot sauce. Sarasota police arrested Efrain Miles of Sarasota on a charge of felony aggravated animal cruelty after he allegedly drenched the puppy head to tail with hot sauce, somewhat entering the dog's eyes and throat. No need to read more about that, but sort of unfortunately circles back into some of the reasons that a book like Kind and some of these other discussions are important to try to educate and limit and... So let's jump in now briefly to Name That Animal Tune. I am Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talk Animals. And the Name That Animal Tune is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. And there'll be a prize. Again, a copy of Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households, signed by author Ellen Jaffe Jones. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune on Talking Animals. All right, we had to at least get some vocal in there. If you know, we'll probably take your guess off there because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, March 5th, when my guest will be Liz Marshall, director of The Ghosts in Our Machine, the acclaimed documentary tracking the work of photographer Joanne MacArthur, who herself was recently a guest on Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me for that next Wednesday. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives, podcasts, past Talking Animals programs, and more. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song from Bob Schneider. We'll be in concert for WMNF on April 15th at Skipper's. Here is Bob Schneider with 40 Days, like Romeo and Juliet, on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
As I said it'd be, but there's something right about you and me. Something right about you and me. You're the color of a bird book. You're the color of a sideways love from an undercover cop in a comic book. You're the color of a storm in June. You're the color of the moon. You're the color of the night. That's right, the color of a fight. You move me. You're the color of the colored part of the Wizard of Oz movie. We're like Romeo and Juliet.